everyone, and welcome to episode 31, I think it is, of the Non-Diet Yogi podcast. So I'm going to start a little series all about moontime nutrition, which is basically breaking down how you can nourish your body through your entire menstrual cycle. I'm going to create a four-part series, this being part one, and I will be recording and or writing blogs for all of this with the goal to do both podcasts and blogs and posts to accompany this information, because I think it's just really, really important to get this stuff out into the world. I don't think we know enough about this in general, and I have personally found it to be so incredibly helpful in optimizing my energy levels, my overall well-being, my mental state, just by being aware of our varying needs through these different phases of our hormonal reality. So who am I to be offering this information? Well, my name is Casey. I am a holistic nutritionist and a non-diet dietitian, have been for over 10 years. I am a health at every size aligned practitioner. I'm also most of the way through my naturopathy degree. So next year I will be a naturopath, which is very exciting. I'll also talk about strength training, yoga, and those things. I have been a yoga teacher for maybe 16-ish years, and I'm also a strength and conditioning coach. So I am hoping to share with you some of the gems that I have discovered, some of them through hard-won and painful experiences, but some of the gold I wish to share with you today about nourishing our menstrual cycle. So today I'm going to start with part one, nourishing your menstrual phase. I'll just give a brief introduction first. So basically, the cyclical nature of the menstrual cycle communicates our constantly changing needs. So we have physical, mental, and emotional needs, obviously. And paying attention to these ebbs and flows, nurturing your body and your mind through each of the four phases of your menstrual cycle, which I'll describe shortly. This, for me at least, has been one of the best health decisions I've ever made. And in our culture, the biological processes that make women most powerful tend to also be the ones that our culture fears, or at least views as somewhat problematic. I am going to lean into the romanticized, you know, idealized ancient times kind of viewpoint on things, but I am very aware of that, so I will just flag that. But generally, there were times in history when menstruation, childbirth, and menopause, at least in some cultures, were seen as crucial initiations that brought with them new heights of wisdom and respect. However, nowadays, menstruation is something that tends to be ignored, tends to be hidden, and similarly, labor and childbirth are kind of mistrusted, or at least tend to be heavily medicalized. Of course, medical intervention is often necessary and life-saving, but then sometimes it can overcomplicate things. And of course, menopause is generally seen as a disease state to be managed, which I just don't agree with. Women and femmes, I should say, are really taught from a young age that periods are something to be ignored in lieu of honoring our monthly need to become, you know, maybe a little bit more introspective and to shed what no longer serves us. We're kind of taught this onwards and upwards attitude. You know, we see advertising for sanitary products suggesting that during our periods, we should all just be able to chuck a tampon in and don a pair of tight white jeans and ride a horse and just basically carry on with life as if nothing kind of magical and attention worthy were happening, which it is. I also don't want you to think that we should all go into a cave and become some kind of meditating monk or nun at this time of our cycle. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be active, especially if we feel like it. Just that I think we ought to pay attention to our bodies throughout our hormonal cycles and adapt accordingly. Now, obviously, I'm speaking to people who have a menstrual cycle, who have a uterus. If this isn't you, but you are still interested, please, you are welcome here. So just want to say that I will use the words women and menstruating folks kind of interchangeably, simply because most of the clients I work with are women. But just, yeah, want to put that out there so as not to invalidate those who do not identify as women yet do have menstrual cycles. So these cyclical phases of our cycle, they really do communicate our constantly changing needs, which is one of the reasons that for so long I've said, you know, going on a diet, a prescriptive diet that says eat this much every day, every, you know, week in, week out, that really doesn't honor our constantly changing needs. There are many other problems with that kind of approach to food, eating and our bodies, of course, but ignoring the cyclical nature of the menstrual cycle is just one of them. And you know what? The benefits of paying attention to these fluctuating needs are just so significant. As I mentioned, I've experienced immense benefit from being able to tune into my cycle and nourish my body accordingly. So in this series, we will explore the four phases of the menstrual cycle and how to best honor them using nutrition, herbs, and lifestyle changes. Now, very briefly, the four changes are firstly, the menstrual phase, which is the one I'll be talking about today, that begins with the first day of bleeding. The second is the follicular phase, which peaks with ovulation. The third is the luteal phase. And there's it's kind of crosses over with the premenstrual phase, but I will break all of that down in future episodes. For now, let's start with the first day of bleeding, the menstrual phase, which starts, as I said, from the first to the last day of bleeding, and it lasts around 3 to 7 days. Some people will say 4 to 8 days, but something around that. It's, I guess, akin to an inner winter or the dark moon phase of the lunar cycle, in that it has traditionally been seen as a time to go within, to slow down, to rest, or even to be in quiet communion with other women or people who are maybe in a similar physiological state. My fertility yoga teacher training has certainly taught me that yoga during menstruation should be gentle and slow, and that's if we even practice at all. Among a few key principles of yoga during menstruation, just as a side note, I was taught that there should be no inversions, and that is something I do innately agree with during the first few days, at least, of my bleed. I definitely don't feel like going upside down on day one or two or even three of my cycle. And that ties in with Chinese medicine and also with Ayurvedic principles of encouraging that downward and outward movement of blood at that time of the month. That said, many folks who menstruate actually do feel a sense of emotional and physical relief once they begin bleeding and can actually experience increased energy. According to physiologist Stacey Sims, the menstrual phase is a time of your cycle. So when you're bleeding, it's a time when your hormonal profile is actually most like a male's. It's when estrogen and progesterone are at an all-time low. So those are the two primary female reproductive hormones. Personally, I feel like my premenstrual phase, so the phase that I'll talk about in the fourth one of these series, I feel like that premenstrual time is the time for me when I want to slow down and really pull back on physical activity, on training. Whereas during menstruation, when I finally begin bleeding, I actually feel a renewed sense of vigor. I'm actually speaking, I think I'm on day 6 or so of my cycle now, and I'm definitely feeling that increase in energy, which is really nice around this time. But basically, once the first day or two of heavier bleeding have passed, I usually have this urge to get outdoors, to go for, you know, long kind of contemplative bushwalks. And by day 3 or 4, I really am kind of busting to ease into my strength routine again, as long as I haven't burnt the candle at both ends and just really just need to rest and recover. But I'll come back to this at the end of the episode. For now, I just want to begin by touching on some nutritional tips I want to offer for nourishing your body during your bleed. So the first tip I have for you is to keep your energy and blood sugar levels steady. It's especially important during your period to get enough slow-burning carbohydrates, healthy fats, and bioavailable proteins to give your body all the building blocks needed to create a healthy new uterine lining. We want to balance our blood sugar levels basically by eating slow-burning carbohydrates. We definitely don't want to cut out carbohydrates altogether. Now is not the time... Well, never is the time for women, really, but now is certainly not the time to be going keto or intermittent fasting. Not having enough carbs can really lower our serotonin levels, that can leave us feeling depressed, and it can bugger up sleep. It can really interfere with getting a proper sleep, not having enough serotonin. And slow-burning carbohydrates include things like root vegetables, whole grains, and legume-packed stews or anything that has legumes, so lentils, chickpeas, bolognese beans, butter beans, etc. You may also notice that contrary to what you experienced in your premenstrual phase, like just, 5-7 days or so before you begin to bleed, that your carbohydrate cravings might start to subside. So during that premenstrual phase, it can be a little bit like, oh my God, I'm craving carbs so much. I just want to eat all the chocolate and the chips. At least that's my experience. And in the luteal or the premenstrual phase, this is really understandable. As I mentioned, women just don't do well on keto or intermittent fasting because they essentially need carbohydrate and there is absolutely research to back this up now. We really rely more on blood sugar than any kind of stored carbohydrate in that premenstrual phase. So I'm talking now about the high hormone phase. On my blog, which is funkyforest.com.au/blog, you will find a written version of this series, including part one, Nourishing Your Menstrual Phase. And I have put some charts up there showing the four different phases of the cycle and what the hormones, estrogen and progesterone are doing at this time. And if you jump on there and have a little look at those charts, you will see in the menstrual phase just how low our estrogen and progesterone levels are. They're pretty much flatlined. So it's in that phase that we're focusing on today, but the phase before that, the premenstrual, even the luteal phase, many women crave carbohydrate. And at that point in our premenstrual phase, we are relying more on blood sugar than on any kind of stored carbohydrate, also known as our glycogen stores in our liver and muscles. In that higher hormone phase, the premenstrual phase, our metabolism actually goes up anywhere between 150 and 250 calories a day. That is equivalent to the energy requirements of the first trimester of pregnancy. It's like an extra snack each day. So often, usually, I find menstruating folks, we are craving more food at that time because we need more food. And then there's this whole, cultural bullshit kind of expectation put on us that, oh my God, I'm hungrier and I shouldn't eat more because I've worked out on my Fitbit that my maintenance calories are XYZ. And then, many women will binge and then they'll enter that whole shame cycle. But they're binging because we're hungrier. We are hungrier at this time of our cycle, that premenstrual phase. I will go into that phase more, as I said, in part four of this series, but for now I'll just say that as we enter our bleed, as we come into that menstrual phase, you may notice those carb cravings hang around for the first day or two, in which case I would say focus on, if you're craving sugar, focus on eating fruit. Do not stop yourself from eating fruit, despite what some keto and paleo people might say. Make sure you're getting Plenty of complex carbohydrates as well, but the simple carbohydrates are important. Fruit contains both macro and micronutrients that are really important. Of course, there's a time and a place for a cherry ripe, a Snickers bar, my favorite's a picnic bar, but you know, for the most part, if we can go the nutritious, kind of nutrient dense foods, then our bodies will really like that, I think. I will discuss the premenstrual phase more in that future podcast. But for now, let's go back to the first couple days of our cycle, the menstrual phase. So the second tip I have is to replenish iron. Obviously, when you're bleeding, you're losing blood. And if you're losing blood, you're losing iron. In traditional Chinese medicine, actually, they have a special focus on nourishing the blood during this time. We can replenish the iron lost during menses by including both heme sources of iron and non-heme sources. So heme just means animal-derived sources of iron. You can find that in things like grass-fed red meat, oysters, mussels, eggs, and of course my all-time favorite, liver, which I would love to get more of these days. But I do have a liver pate recipe for the liver shy people on my website. I will link to in the show notes. I also have a little story accompanying that and my aversion to liver up until trying this recipe for the very first time and then falling in love with the nutrient dense wonder food that it really is. If you are vegan or vegetarian or don't like any of those foods, then we have our non-heme or plant-derived sources. And that includes many of the green leafy vegetables. So kale, spinach, bok choy, silver beet. By the way, a bonus of consuming many of those cruciferous vegetables is that they help to metabolize and eliminate excess estrogen. Other non-heme sources of iron are things like lentils and other beans. We've got cashews, prune juice, figs, blackstrap molasses, which I discovered in my vegan years. And if you have found a good way to use blackstrap molasses, please let me know, because I used to put it in smoothies, but never actually found a super enjoyable way to eat it. Actually, I've just remembered that I used to make a vegan baked beans, like oven baked beans, and I would add blackstrap molasses to that, and it was pretty good. So there you go. I should also mention that adding foods containing vitamin C to meals when you are eating those heme or non-heme sources of iron is a really good idea, because vitamin C will enhance the iron absorption in those meals. So you can find vitamin C in things like broccoli, citrus fruit, so grapefruit, oranges, lemons, etc., kiwi fruit, leafy greens, capsicums or peppers, as my North American friends would say, strawberries, stuff like that. If you are someone who has heavy periods, this does put you at a greater risk of developing iron deficiency anemia. So symptoms of anemia include feeling really fatigued, shortness of breath, feeling lightheaded, pale mucous membrane. So if you pull down your bottom eyelid and look in a mirror, that little bit of mucous membrane directly in that squishy bit of your eyelid should be quite red, or at least very pink. And if it is pale, that could be a sign of iron deficiency. You can also look at your nail beds and at your gums to get an idea of that. And another symptom of anemia is heart palpitations while you are exercising. If you have heavy periods and you are an athletic person, the risk of anemia is actually even greater due to the increased muscle stress damage and inflammation from the high levels of cortisol circling around your body after, say, a hard training session. And high cortisol causes the liver to release more of the hormone hepcidin, which negatively impacts iron absorption. So for anyone who does bleed heavily on their period, I would suggest getting your blood tested because an iron supplement may be warranted. You may find it very, very difficult to bump up your blood iron stores fast enough to keep up pace with the blood loss of menstruation. So get your blood tested, consult a health practitioner like your GP. They might refer you to a dietitian, nutritionist, naturopaths can also be great here to figure out either how to increase the dietary supplementary intake of iron or how to supplement. And it's really important not to supplement until you get those blood tests done, since taking too much iron or the wrong form of it can cause other problems. Tip number three is all about magnesium. So everyone loves magnesium. I personally take magnesium quite often. It is one of the most common deficiencies that at least people in Australia experience, and it helps with a bunch of things, but today I'm going to focus on its application for uterine cramps. So to shed your lining of your uterus essentially contracts, it squeezes, it cramps, which doesn't sound very nice, but this process is driven basically by a release of hormone-like chemicals called prostaglandins, specifically prostaglandin E2, I believe it is called. So it's an estrogen-mediated prostaglandin. And while some people are lucky and they feel little to no pain or no cramping during menstruation, for others it feels hella painful and can be downright debilitating. The best way to reduce the intensity of these cramps, if this is you, is to prepare ahead. So I'm talking about late luteal phase, 5 to 7 days before your period starts. You can try taking magnesium, omega-3 fatty acids, which are anti-inflammatory, as well as other anti-inflammatory foods and herbs. So things like turmeric or curcumin in supplemental form, chili, dark chocolate, fish, especially oily fish, and extra virgin olive oil. Dr. Stacey Sims, a physiologist I already mentioned, recommends taking 80 milligrams of aspirin during this time. So I think that's a baby aspirin, as that suppresses the production of prostaglandin E2 irreversibly. As a nutritionist and soon to be naturopath, yay, I err towards trying anti-inflammatory foods and herbs first, as opposed to regular long-term aspirin use, which can bring about things like gastric ulcers and bleeding with long-term use, I'm talking about. Also, coming back to those omega-3 fatty acid-rich foods, include plenty of those. So I'm talking oily fish, ideally organic eggs with the yolk in it, nuts and seeds, including flaxseed and hemp seeds. And of course, our garlic, our ginger and turmeric as herbs which are anti-inflammatory. And interestingly, traditional Chinese medicine tells us that ginger keeps our body warm and aids digestion. So that's a little bonus with ginger there. Taken daily, magnesium may prevent dysmenorrhea. So there is a significant body of research that shows us this. I have references in the blog on my website, funkyforest.com.au/blog, if you want to check out those references. But basically, magnesium may prevent menstrual cramps in many people, and it works by relaxing the smooth muscles of the uterus and by reducing those prostaglandins I mentioned that cause period pain and intense cramping. We can also think about eating foods that contain magnesium. So whole grains, dark green leafy vegetables, nuts and legumes all contain magnesium. And a magnesium supplement, a bath or a magnesium oil spray can also help. I personally don't like the sprays. I find that I feel really itchy and my skin feels a bit stingy when I use them. But magnesium chloride salt baths, or I do have my favorite magnesium supplement, which is Bioceuticals Ultra Muscle Ease Night, which I often take before going to bed. I'm not paid by Bioceuticals. I wish I was, but that is the best one that I have found in terms of taste, because a lot of them, to me, taste like ass. So I'll also just quickly mention that, like magnesium, zinc is also heavily used in the building and shedding of your uterine lining. The best source of zinc is oysters, but it's also plentiful in red meat and in poultry, so chicken and turkey and stuff like that. Other good sources include beans, nuts, crab, if you're into crab. Blur, I don't like crab, but I know many of you do. Whole grains, cereals, and dairy products. So that's enough about magnesium. I'm going to move on to tip number four, which is be kind to your tummy. So during our periods, many of us experience gastrointestinal upset. I know that personally, I experience a bit more gas, a bit more farting, some diarrhea even, or looser stools, just needing to go to the toilet more often. I definitely notice that when my bleed begins, especially in those first couple days. In extreme cases, for some people, there can also be nausea and vomiting. And all of these gastrointestinal symptoms have a lot to do with the prostaglandins that cause those uterine contractions I was talking about. So during this time, I think it's important that we just know our body and its limits. So maybe if you're going to go on a big training run or something like that, make sure you follow a route that has plenty of public toilets. Just consider giving yourself multiple chances to go to the toilet during the day if you know that is you. Warm, cooked, fermented, and sprouted foods for many people are easier to digest at this time. And finally, there are quite a few herbs that can help with digestive symptoms. And in fact, for people who suffer from irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, and who notice it does worsen when you're menstruating, the Iberogast formulation is really lovely. That contains, I think, 9 herbs. So it's got angelica, chamomile, caraway, I think it's got some liver support, some St. Mary's thistle, bitters, lemon balm, peppermint, licorice, and a few other herbs in there that it's just a beautiful little combination that can help with gastrointestinal upset, both for people with IBS and for those who experience some of those more severe symptoms during your menstruation. Tip number 5, migraines say no. So nitric oxide, that is just a little play on words. Menstrual headaches is what I'm talking about here. Menstrual headaches tend to happen when estrogen and progesterone levels drop off. And that's kind of just before the start of your bleed. Some people are still experiencing headaches around days 1 and 2. So the first 1 to 2 days of their bleed. And those headaches, rather than being caused by those dropping hormone levels, are more to do with the change of blood pressure and the sudden dilation and constriction of blood vessels in your head. So a way to mitigate this is to stay hydrated and to eat more nitric oxide or NO-rich foods, things like beetroot, pomegranate, spinach, and watermelon. Definitely in the days leading up to the start of your period, because these foods promote dilation and they reduce the severity of those hemodynamic shifts, those changes in blood pressure and in what the blood vessels are doing there. Migraines and absolutely tension headaches can also be alleviated by magnesium. So double points for that mineral. Yay, it's great for uterine cramps, it's great for sleep, it's great for tension, headaches and migraines, it's great for musculoskeletal kind of muscle twitches and restless legs. Magnesium, it's one of my favorites. Tip number 6, I think we're up to. I'm going to just talk very briefly about the energetics. So I'm going to lean a little away from the biomedical explanations and research base here and a bit more towards Chinese medicine and Ayurveda. So energetically, if we're thinking about nourishing our menstrual phase, we're thinking about adding warmth and adding moisture. When we lose blood, we lose warmth and we lose moisture. According to traditional Chinese medicine, our energy turns inwards and goes through, I hate this word, but it's used often in Chinese medicine. It goes through a so-called cleansing process during this phase. And by cleanse, I don't mean going on a stupid 3-day juice cleanse. Oh, I just hate those so much. I'm talking about your body, your uterus is shedding its lining, basically. It is a shedding process, rather. Let's use the word shedding instead of cleansing. It just triggers me too much. So traditional Chinese medicine also places significant importance on eating foods according to the seasons, which I'm also really big on. One of the main reasons for that, I guess, is because I am on a budget and eating seasonally is generally cheaper. Right now, I'm recording this on the in early September in Southeast Queensland of Australia. So right now where I am, we're just coming out of winter. Spring has just begun, and warm foods like vegetable soups and hearty stews, bone broths, all these kind of warm, moist, nourishing foods contain really valuable amino acids and collagen, and are just delicious. So these can be really helpful, especially during the menstrual phase, not just coming out of winter, but kind of in general at any time of the year, as long as you feel like those. Similarly, Ayurveda teaches that during menstruation, our Agni or digestive fire is naturally low during menstruation, and that this can actually be hindered by cold or heavy foods. So I guess that ties in with what I was saying earlier about how we need to look after our digestion during our menstrual phase. Similarly, in the days before and during your period, Chinese medicine recommends, and I don't like saying don't eat this or that because I'm a non-diet dietitian, but I'm just saying what TCM recommends here, and they will tell you to avoid or at least reduce your intake of extremely cold or raw foods. So things like ice cream, ice drinks and sushi, so on. Recently, like just to demonstrate how flexible you can be with this, I was up in North Queensland for a couple of days having a big break, and it was warmer up there. And yes, I was menstruating and I still went out and got ice cream and it was delightful and I was fine. So, you know, take this advice with a grain of salt and be intuitive about it. But basically, Chinese medicine says that those kind of cold foods are overly yin in nature, that they slow blood down in the uterus, they slow down the flow of blood, the movement of blood out of the body. So that's why they say or suggest eating and drinking warm and cooked foods. And I think those are basic guidelines that you can generally kind of follow. But as I said, nothing to tie your knickers in a knot over. Personally, I don't do that. This might be a wonderful time to have those comfort foods and those easy to digest, warming, slow cooked foods, the casseroles, the soups and stews and bone broths and root vegetables. Our bodies are creating a healthy new uterine lining at this time, so it is pretty important to get adequate amounts of slow releasing carbs, good fats and healthy proteins, as I mentioned in point number one. The very last thing, the very last tip that I'll offer for today is basically to listen to your body. So I think it's interesting that the marathoner Paula Radcliffe first broke the world record in Chicago for marathon in 2002 after suffering period cramps during the last third of the race. And so despite menstruating, she smashed it. And this is supported actually by a hormonal physiology showing that the main menstrual cycle hormones have flatlined during our bleed. Ironically, this is the time when our hormonal profile is most like a man's. And I've always found this interesting, at least I did when I first kind of realized this. There are these romantic kind of ideals that I've learned in many a women's circle and you know, with the whole shamanic womancraft movement, this idea that we should all be quiet, we should all be still and go within and meditate in a cave. But I'm wondering now if these ideas can be limiting, because what the physiology shows is that in our low hormone phase, so when we're bleeding, there is less hormone-driven sympathetic drive. So I'm talking about our fight or flight, that adrenalized kind of state. There's less of that. Without all of those stress hormones floating around, our bodies are more resilient to stress during our bleed and during that low hormone phase. And that includes the stress of exercise or resistance training. After we ovulate, so fast forwarding in the menstrual cycle a bit, going to, you know, on average day 14, after ovulation, our progesterone starts to rise. And whilst progesterone has many wonderful effects, it also induces this more sympathetic dominance, this sympathetic nervous system drive. And that reduces our ability to get into a more rest and digest kind of parasympathetic mode. So counter to the many sources saying that we should be still and quiet during our bleed and stay tucked up in bed until our bleed is over, training during your period is actually one of the best ways to capitalize on that more male-like hormonal profile. Women, and I learned this from Stacey Sims, that women can access carbohydrates especially well from our glycogen stores in our liver and muscles at that low hormone time. We can generally hit higher in training intensities. We can recover quite well from that training stimulus more quickly because of that enhanced resilience to stress. And this is all while we are bleeding and leading up to ovulation. Another cool thing is that our immune systems are also more resilient before ovulation, so in that menstrual, that early follicular phase. And that makes sense because if you think about it, the body is generating the best possible conditions to support a fertilized egg in that first, 14 days roughly of the menstrual cycle. So as much as I love yin yoga, especially on, days 1, 2, even 3 of my period, if this is a little bit how you're feeling as well, don't be perturbed. If you feel like hitting it hard or going for a run or doing, some stronger kind of weightlifting or whatever floats your boat, dancing vigorously around your living room while you are menstruating. If you're up for that, if you feel like crawling into bed and curling into a ball, maybe if you have horrible menstrual cramps or, you just feel tired, then of course do that. But I just think if you have that energy and you feel like getting out there, go for it. Sometimes I kind of wonder if some of that mentality around hiding from the world when you're menstruating is perpetuated by the kind of historic marginalization of women. But that's, that's a little rabbit hole right there. Basically, if you're feeling up for it, know that physiologically at least, maybe not mentally, emotionally for everyone, but physiologically, your body can handle it. And you could make some serious headway in improving your strength and fitness in this time. So that's it for nourishing your menstrual phase. Thank you so much for listening. As I said, this is the first of 4 in a series where I will explore all 4 phases of the menstrual cycle and how to best honor them using nutrition. I have a corresponding article up online complete with some of those references that I mentioned. If you're interested in that, you want to nerd out, hats off to my fellow nerds. I'd also like to mention that if you love the podcast, please leave a 5-star rating, a review on Apple iTunes. And if you really, really love it and you want to help me keep this podcast going, you can go to patreon.com/nondietyogi for $2 US a month. You can support the podcast there. You get a heap of bonuses that you can check out if you wander over to there. That would make my day. So patreon.com/nondietyogi if you want to show some love. That is it for today. I'm going to start seeing clients in 20 minutes, so I better stop the recording and hope that you all have a wonderful day. I will speak to you next time. Bye.